Right then, the tape is rolling.
Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. Welcome to Crave. This is the podcast dedicated to music and movies and television and theatre and just about anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And this week, probably the biggest name in popular music has just completed his one and only New Zealand concert of his tour. Last concert of an 18-month tour. That would be Sir, and seriously, he deserves the titles here. Sir Paul McCartney's show at Mount Smart Stadium last night.
Indeed. Now, not quite as big a name, perhaps, but still a very welcome and well-received show here from Yusuf Cat Stevens. He packed out a couple of nights at Auckland Spark Arena.
Now, a much younger player in the pop scene also showed up in the last week or so. This would be Sia, along with a host of opening acts.
Now, a big movie franchise, no surprises for guessing which one, has just launched its latest episode on the big screen. Star Wars The Last Jedi has arrived. Is that episode 8, Steve, I think it is?
Yes.
8 or whatever. Anyway, we'll discuss whether it's a film which is living up to its hype.
Could it?
Oh, there's a question. We'll save that for later.
Yeah. Now, one that absolutely lives up to what little hype it got and what lots of hype it deserved is everyone's favourite cute and cuddly bear, Paddington. Now, this might just be what the holidays have ordered for the young ones, but I tell you know what? It's wasted on the kids. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Very good. I'm looking forward to hearing you tell me about that one. And by the way, towards the end of the podcast, Steve and I will select our favourite concerts and movies of the year and perhaps those which were at the other end of that list. But Steve, let's start with Sir Paul McCartney. You were there. I couldn't be there, but you were. So tell me, obviously you were, it's not too trite to say you were in the presence. Well, he's a music legend, a genuine music legend. What sort of show did he put on?
Well, you're right. I mean, we were in the presence of royalty and he put on the show that you would hope for. I don't think it was a show I expected. It was a 3-hour show.
Well, that says something right from the start.
From a 75-year-old bloke who has got the energy and the enthusiasm and you know, you said you were genuine, and I think that suits it down to the ground. The most astonishing performance that a man half his age would have been delighted to put on. It was wonderful. I mean, first of all, let's just point out the obvious. He's a Beatle with all that entails. He's got the greatest back catalogue of songs available to any singer.
Yes.
No one can touch that. He forms with, as I say, boundless energy. Considering he's 75, dear God, I wish I was that good at my age.
Yes.
He's lean, he's young, he's energetic, he's enthusiastic. I mean, this tour has grossed $120 million. He's not doing it for the money. He can't need the money any longer. No. But you can tell he genuinely enjoys it. As far as you can tell, there's this very real sense, and it could be an act. If it is, it's a bloody good one.
Yes.
He's still somewhere deep inside. He's still an 18-year-old from Liverpool going, wow, I can't believe I've actually made it. He's got this unbelievable, honest enthusiasm. He's performing songs that you know so deep, the part of your DNA. I mean, they open with A Hard Day's Night.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, they play Can't Buy Me Love. I think it was the third or the fourth song in the set. You know, when you've got that stuff coming in so early, you know there's incredible stuff coming.
Yeah.
His voice is...
I want to ask you about his voice, a 75-year-old voice. How is it?
It's not a 75-year-old voice.
Okay.
It really isn't. I mean, yeah, he's definitely aged, but aged in the sense of developed and matured and grown, not as in become old and tired.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I will post some audio as we edit the podcast later. For example, when he sang Blackbird, there was just him and his acoustic guitar on a platform at the front of the stage, and it was exquisite. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Right.
Let It Be, him and a piano. Yeah. Didn't need a band. I mean, the band he had were amazing, fantastic.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, because you've got some, you've arranged some great photos on our website, cravepodcast.com, and it looks like there's maybe 3 or 4 other musicians only. Is that right?
That was it. Yeah, he's got a guitarist who I don't have the names in front of me. I should do, really. In fact, you know what? Here we are. This is what the internet's good for, isn't it? chap named Rusty Anderson who played lead guitar with astonishing fluidity and energy He's got a British keyboard player called Paul Wickens, who's been around forever. He's done all kinds of stuff. Played all the really rich, complex arrangements you used to in songs like, say, you know, the strings at the start of Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah.
All that on keyboards, and it sounded perfect. And I'll be honest, I've never been a fan of Ringo Starr. I've always embraced the snark that has accompanied the man.
Yes.
And I think it's fantastic he's finally got a world-class drummer behind him, a bloke named Abe Laboriel Jr., who played astonishing, powerful, fluid, beautiful drums.
Yeah.
The whole band, I'm playing Brian Ray, who had the awkward task of having to play bass when Paul was on the keys.
Oh, okay, right.
And how do you, I mean, he played it right-handed, he's obviously just, you know, wrong. But how do you take over from a beat? I mean, you know, but they all did very well. They were young, they're energetic, they're phenomenal players in their own right.
Yes.
This is as good a concert as I have seen in a very, very, very long time.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I couldn't get enough of it. Like I say, a three-hour show, 2.5 hours, off for 2 minutes, and then back on for a half-hour encore.
Yeah.
Songs like, I mean, Helter Skelter, he ripped to pieces.
Right.
Live and Let Die.
Oh, that would have been, okay.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, you're right. It was astonishing.
Yeah.
And I didn't get good video, unfortunately, because...
Yes.
We made a big mistake.
What's that?
Well, Debbie and I went to the show last night, and I knew that we were up for comp tickets, as we often are, world-class musical commentators and critics.
Yes.
And so we didn't bother buying tickets.
Ah.
And so we got what we were given, which was right off in the wings at Mount Smart Stadium. And when McCartney went up to his piano, we couldn't even see him.
Oh, okay.
When we
Never
did
mind.
See him, he was about that big.
Yeah.
Tiny. Front row tickets, well, row B, I think it was, we could have bought for $400 a pop.
Oof, okay.
And we just couldn't quite bring ourselves to it.
No, fair enough.
In hindsight, if we had, that would have been a concert for the ages.
Yes. Well, the fact that you are still so bowled over, given your seating position, tells me just how good it was.
It really was that good, seriously.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, I even regret even more that I didn't go, but I'm very glad that you did and you can tell us about it. It's one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to hear someone whose music has been in your life your whole life.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, he plays Eleanor Rigby, he plays Hey Jude back in the USSR. These are songs that you grow up with that have always been there.
Mm.
And you get the feeling that he genuinely enjoys it. And one thing that I did mention in my review on the website, but I think you'll possibly appreciate the full significance of this. He told stories about how some of the songs came about. And you remember somebody else doing that recently?
Yes, indeed. We certainly do. Yes,
and do you remember how toe-curlingly horrible it was?
Yes.
Yeah, Paul McCartney wasn't. I mean, the man's just he's got that effortless, easy charm about him. They just feel so absolutely honest, and his stories were self-effacing. They weren't self-indulgent and self-aggrandizing.
Right. Excellent.
I could have listened to him all night. He was fantastic. And at the very end, he said, "See you next time." Now, I don't know. I genuinely don't know, but we can only hope.
We can only hope. Well, that's fantastic.
Really
yeah, so Paul McCartney in Auckland for just that one show at the Mount Smart Stadium.
It's true. Find myself in times of trouble. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. Yeah.
Now, he's not the only big name from the 60s and 70s to have been in town.
Indeed not.
So we had Cat Stevens and his backing band, or was it his opening act, Yusuf? It's not quite clear on the billing.
No, just him. Just him and a fantastic band. So I saw on Thursday night, Steve, the Yusuf Cat Stevens show at Spark Arena.
Yes.
It was, I also would use the word fantastic. And it's not, in a way, it's a similar sort of feeling that you had at St. Paul. I mean, this is a guy who, okay, he wasn't as a global a superstar, but in the late 60s and early 70s, his music was everywhere. Some tunes that will have stayed with you for your life. And I was reflecting when he was on stage that some of those songs I think were very influential on me as a young lad. And here you are as an adult, the same guy singing the same material live in front of you with that voice, which is instantly recognizable,
yes.
A voice which, like Sir Paul's, was in very good shape. And there's just something kind of a little surreal about all that. I know it's just nostalgia, but I don't think you should say just nostalgia. It's quite an emotional, a deeply emotional thing. And I talk a bit about the show. He a bit like Sir Paul's, it's a bit of a charting of his career from his early material right through, concentrating, of course, on that early 70s big period from the albums like Tea for the Tiller Man and Teaser and the Firecat, moving on to a couple of covers, some more recent material that wasn't quite as well known, with a superb band, and a little bit of chit chat between, not very much. Like Sir Paul, he kept to the less is more idea, which was much better than sadly Stevie Nicks chose to go down a few weeks earlier.
Yeah.
So it was a stage set in a as if to look at, it was a London train station, because he was born in London. He grew up in a cafe above his parents' cafe and a little shop above there. So it was all a little bit of a career charting. The thing that was really, apart from his effortless voice, which was in fine shape, was he was also self-effacing. He could have, and this was something I wondered in the back of my mind, Steve, because I guess you would know about Cat Stevens that he famously converted to Islam, didn't he? And that's why he's Yusuf Cat Stevens.
Of course.
And he removed himself from the entertainment industry for a long time. And I wondered, well, are we going to get a little bit of preaching here? You know, is that going to be part of the deal? Well, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. He didn't mention the word Islam. He didn't even say that he decided to call himself Yusuf. It was the chit-chat was about his songs, a bit about his career, certainly that he'd had been on some sort of a inner journey, but not getting into the religious aspect of it at all. So other than to say at one point, if you want to find out more about this big 27-year gap in my life, go read my book. And that was as far as he took that. But when you hear songs like Miles from Nowhere, Father and Son, Morning Has Broken, Peace Train, Where Do the Children Play, I tell you, people almost lost themselves in joy, and just you could hear the cries of yes, he's doing that song. I'm sure the same was at Mount Smart Stadium. But it was very, very good. He was laid back in a very genuine sort of a way. And I'll just mention one song, because I guess all these sort of concerts, maybe there was one song Sir Paul played that struck a chord for you, Steve. I don't know, but the very first song I ever learned to play on a guitar was Where Do the Children Play?
Oh, right.
I don't know how old I was. I might have been 17 or 18 or something like that. I started to try and learn some chords a bit later on in life. And I remember my friend teaching me the chords, and I remember playing that song. And I played it a few times in public over the years when I was younger, not to any great audience, but nevertheless, I have played it. And so it's a song, means something to me, the first one I ever learned, and he played it. And
fantastic. And
it was great. And I got quite teary-eyed, I have to say. I thought, oh, my God, this is it. It's happening right in front of me. So I guess, you know, you just take away from things from a concert like that, and I guess for a lot of Beatles fans with Sir Paul McCartney, a really strong emotional connection that is, if you go with it, well, what the hell? That's what music's about, are those emotional connections, and it certainly did it for me. He was fit and lean. I can imagine he could come back. I think he's a bit younger than Sir Paul. He's about 68, 69, somewhere around about there. If he ever came back, and if you were a fan of his music and you missed the chance, I really, really would strongly recommend seeing him. It was just a lovely night out, and something to treasure. So there you are.
That's pretty high praise.
Oh, yes, you know. Now, listen. No. So I did enjoy it. Now, just before we get on to movie type stuff, I just wanted to ask you, Steve, about Sia, because I went back and checked the website because there are some photos there of the concert, and you made this comment about how Sia. Well, apart from the fact that it was an interesting mixture of opening acts, about how Sia positioned herself on stage. Well, this sounds interesting.
We've just talked about two absolutely consummate performers.
Yeah.
Two people who know exactly how to work a crowd, work a stage, and put on what you and I would recognise as a concert, right?
Yeah.
So I went to see Sia. It's nearly a fortnight ago now. It was just after we recorded our last podcast. And she was playing at Mount Smart Stadium, as McCartney did last night. He filled the place. She didn't.
Right.
And she had three opening acts. She had a young Kiwi woman by the name of Thea, who... She was adequate. She was perfectly decent. I found her to be a little bit uninspiring, but I think that's personal taste. She had Charlie XCX is a young woman from the UK who puts on quite an impressive show. She does the whole actually engaging with the audience thing, and it was very agreeable and very entertaining. And in massive contrast with last night's experience at the Paul McCartney show, because I was shooting the concert, we were actually allowed to remain in the photo pit for the duration of the support acts.
Wow, okay.
Which was really nice. It's the only way to see a concert, it really is. And then there was a Danish woman who, I believe it's pronounced Mur. It's M with the O with a line through it, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, okay.
And again, you know... The music's not entirely my taste, but you know, she sort of performed like a dark lord, if that makes any sense. Sort of prowled around the stage, and the music wasn't a million miles removed from what you'd expect from Lord. And you know, I thought, this is good, this isn't bad, you know, I can enjoy this.
Yep.
And then the curtain came down across the stage, and eventually Sia came on, and it was bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. Her thing apparently is that she's very publicity shy and doesn't want her face seen in public when she's on stage. So she wears a wig that covers most of her face, almost as far down as her mouth, but you can barely even see her mouth at all.
Goodness me.
She stood in front of a microphone stand,
yeah,
gripping the microphone with one hand and the stand with the other,
yes,
stock still.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was her performance.
Right.
Completely white backdrop to the stage.
Right.
And a young woman, actually a girl, about 15-year-old girl named Maddie Ziegler, danced.
Ah, okay.
And that was it. Basically, it was a dance show and it was karaoke.
Yeah.
She may or may not have been singing live. We have no way of knowing for certain. It may or may not have been Sia. We have no way of knowing for certain. And that was it. That was the show. Was a woman standing at a microphone stand, completely inert, and one or two dancers.
And how long did this go on for?
This hour and a half show, apparently. I did my three songs of photography and left.
Yeah.
But as far as I can tell, and reading reviews afterwards, there seems to be a split in opinions between either A, she's a misunderstood genius, and if you didn't get it, then you're just a Philistine.
Right.
And what the hell was that?
Yes,
and I'm having seen, like, you know, actual concerts since then, I'm definitely going in the "you've got to be kidding me" camp.
Oh well,
it was absolutely bizarre, and frankly, you know, in a stadium, if all you're seeing is a woman dancing, then that's it. That's not a stadium show. She could possibly made it work at the arenas,
yes,
but not,
yes,
not in the stadiums.
No,
very strange. Bizarre.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe the less said about that, the better.
Yeah, you didn't miss much on that one, Simon.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Okay, so that was Sia. Okay, well, that's the music, and there's certainly been a few extremely memorable performances in the last few days. Also in the last few days, Steve, a very, very much anticipated film has just opened.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Anticipated by probably, I don't know, a few hundred million people around the world. We're talking about Star Wars: The Last Jedi. So, you know, the stakes are pretty high now that this latest batch of Star Wars movies, the production values have been pretty good. And I guess the anticipation was extremely high. We've both seen it. Did it rattle your cage, if that's the right way to put it?
I think we should start with a disclaimer from the very start. Neither of us really is a hardcore Star Wars fan. I mean, we are both appreciative of the genre.
Yes. But no, that's true.
We're not the guys who show up cloaked like Jedi with the robes and the what do they call them in the film? Laser swords. We're not quite that.
Lightsabers.
Yeah. Sorry, I apologize.
No, you're right.
It was different, wasn't it? I mean, I think that the thing that has to be said is with a new director, a new writer in Rian Johnson, it actually was quite good.
Well, you see, I had very starkly contrasted feelings going through the film. I thought some parts of it were very good.
Yes.
I think Rian Johnson, the director, has a great eye for constructing some visuals, and there were some really memorable shots. Some sequences were exciting and gripping, but I personally thought there were some other parts of it which, for me, dragged. We're not going to get in too much into the plot here, but we won't spoil it too much to say that there are two main sort of plot threads, aren't there, Steve?
Yes.
Especially early on. They come together later. But to begin with, as we saw at the end of the previous film, we see Rey arrive on this distant planet visiting this remote island. And actually, at the end of the last film, she actually fronts up to Luke Skywalker. So we know that sequence has to then be developed in this new film.
Yes.
So that's one of the threads. And then you've got another, the Resistance now on board a big ship are trying to shake off the First Order Armada on their tail. And there's a whole sequence that follows through.
Right.
And it would be fair to say that certainly the first half, two-thirds of the film, you're kind of bouncing between those two plot threads. Is that a fair way to
sum
it up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, some of that just dragged, I have to say. And that's not necessarily to do with the acting. I mean, I think, for example, Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley handle their roles very, very well. And it's a big deal to have Luke Skywalker return. I guess if you're a Star Wars fan, you've been waiting a long time, and this was his first full movie. We got just a little, very briefest of shots in the previous one. So there's a lot to savor there. But I just found there's a dynamic there of be careful, I don't want to give too much away, but it wouldn't be too much of a surprise to be told that, you know, Rey's obviously trying to enlist Luke's aid.
Yes, yes.
And the dynamic of will he, won't he, for me, just dragged on a bit long, and I got a bit tired of it myself. But I know others probably would have lapped it up. How did that part of the film work for you?
Well, I personally thought that Daisy Ridley is the star of the show. She is a fantastic actress who delivers her lines with the most wonderful natural dignity. Mm-hmm. She's a wonderful, wonderful screen presence. I really enjoyed watching her. Mark Hamill has grown into the character of Luke Skywalker fantastically. He's really, really embraced the role.
Yeah.
That worked for me reasonably well. There were some clanging moments when they tried to do callbacks to the first trio of films that felt shoehorned in at best.
Mm-hmm.
We won't give spoilers there because we can really ruin things.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that, and this again comes back to your first point about us, perhaps neither of us being huge Star Wars fans, there's just something about, you know, we see in that all those sequences, Luke and Rey being pretty, it's pretty serious stuff. It's pretty heartfelt.
Yeah.
It's, but you know, in the dressing and the visual dressing around all that, you've got these cute little penguin-y like things called porgs.
Porgs.
Or porgs.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, I don't know, I just find it all a bit jarring and a bit sort of, that never has worked for me. So maybe that's just part of my personal bias. Well, it is my personal bias. There's no maybe about it.
So you've never been a big fan of the Ewoks then, though?
No, yeah, and don't say Jar Jar Binks. Oh, I said it. Don't say that.
But they can't help putting those little cutesy bits in.
No,
they can't help themselves.
No, I guess they feel that's part of the Star Wars legacy that they must maintain,
yes.
I guess. But anyway, so, yeah, I had I appreciated what was going on, but it just was dragged out for me, that sequence. And the other big sequence, as we just said, was the whole the resistance on the run type storyline. And, pretty good. Another sort of dangerous side mission has to be embarked on to try and, you know, protect the safety of the resistance. And we've seen lots of dangerous side missions in these movies before.
Oh, yeah.
The actors, John Boyega is Finn. I thought there's a new character called Rose, and Kelly Marie Tran plays yes. her. She was very good. I really enjoyed her performance. There's a bit of spark and action, and there's some, you know, they bring in Laura Dern there to give some acting heft to what's going on. It works okay. You know what I was thinking as I was watching that sequence, Steve?
What's that?
That is that one of the reasons why I think the early films maybe worked for people was that when you have a character like Han Solo,
here we go. You've been waiting to work this in, haven't you? Really miss Han, don't you?
I miss that type of character, which is someone who is being adventurous, cracking a few, you know, jokes, taking it seriously, but not that seriously. And that's where, for example, the new sort of take on Han is the dashing hero Poe Dameron, played yes. by Oscar Isaac. Yes. Now he is a dashing guy, and he's got a bit of that rebellious streak about him, which I guess is what Han Solo had. But he's very earnest.
Yeah, he doesn't quite have the spark. Really,
no, so and I just it. Felt a character like it didn't. I mean, Han Solo was killed off in the previous movie, we think. But by not having someone like him around, it just I lacked a little bit of that sort of self-deprecating wit about it that maybe the other film had. For me, anyway, this is just, you know, my take on it. Now, last time, I can ask you this. Last time I remember you telling me you didn't really buy Adam Driver. He wasn't an actor that you really have bought into in the past. Are you still of that view after seeing this film?
I still think that the whole Kylo Ren character arc and the realization of him by Adam Driver just don't quite work. I've never really cared for Driver as an actor, and the character of Kylo Ren still feels like, instead of having absolute profound evil that you saw in Darth Vader, and that's the character that Kylo Ren is very explicitly modeled on, instead of having simple malice and malevolent evil, you have anger. That's what drives Kylo Ren. It's anger, which comes across, unfortunately, as petulance, and it doesn't work. Driver's not got the depth for it. He can't make it work. And no, I didn't like it. I still don't buy into it.
Well, okay, let's, for the sake of argument, and actually it's not for the sake of argument, I have a different take on it. I do like him.
I know my point of view is not that popular and that widespread. I accept that, but
you know. The reason, one of the things is that I think that very thing that you've just said about, you know, he's not as purely malevolently evil, I quite like that, because I think one of the things that Star Wars has is that good guys are good guys and bad guys are bad guys, and we don't know really why the dark side wants to be evil. But here, at least in Kylo Ren, you've got a character who is conflicted.
Yeah, okay.
So for me, that is a bit more interesting. I think he's I kind of, because he's not a archetypally handsome leading sort of guy.
No, he's really not, is he?
Yeah, I quite like that as well. So I don't mind him. One thing I would say, I don't think they didn't really advance that much his dynamic from the previous film. He's still conflicted. He was conflicted at the end of the first film, and he's still conflicted. So there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge before we really get to some sort of resolution with him. But I guess they want to keep that going for as long as possible. But
super.
Yeah. But I, you know, just to end on a good note, I do think the director did a great job, and there were a couple of shots there which were very good. I love, there's a mirror sequence.
Oh, that was fabulous,
Ray.
Wasn't it? Yes.
I thought that was fantastic. There's a confrontation. I don't think this is giving too much away. We do see Luke and Kylo square off. I'll leave it at that. But that visually worked, I thought, really, really well. There's a couple of lovely close-ups. One of Kylo grasping his lightsaber, looking almost down the line of the saber towards his hands grasping it. I thought that was a great shot. So there's a lot of good to take away, but yeah, and I guess if you are an absolute Star Wars hardcore fan, you'll just love it. But to me, it felt like a middle chapter type film.
Well, that's one big problem that we have now with Star Wars. The very first film stood on its own. It had a beginning and an end, and it resolved things. And yeah, there was scope for a sequel, but it didn't feel like it that the entire film was setting up the sequel.
Yeah.
Whereas these days, you just feel like, well, you know, there's no need to resolve things because you know characters are coming back for the next bit. And that's not good storytelling. I don't care for that. What I do care for, I'm going to be positive about some things here.
Yes.
We've not yet mentioned Domhnall Gleeson as General Hux.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yep.
Who brings more humor and levity to The Last Jedi than I think exists in the entire of the rest of the series.
He's
very, very good.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Andy Serkis as Supreme Leader. First of all, like, Snoke.
You cannot have
a Supreme Leader called Snoke.
I know, that's ridiculous.
It is, but if anyone can pull it off, it's Andy Serkis. Now, he does bring malice and malevolence to the role.
He does.
Superb. He was very, very good.
Yeah.
And let's just say goodbye to Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, we should. Because as you know, she passed away after the filming was complete. After the apparent death of Han Solo the last time, she was one of those last few survivors of those early films. There was a kind of a weird scene involving Princess Leia in the film, Steve, that stuck out a little. An unexplained, odd scene in space, which was unanswered. It was unexplained, I should say. And I thought, what's going on there? That struck a bit of an odd.
Yes, and I know the one you're talking about. We'll avoid spoilers, but if anyone sees the film, they'll know exactly what we're talking about. It did not work.
Yeah, very odd.
One question we'll raise, though, also, since you referred to her as Princess Leia.
Yes.
How can a princess lead a republic?
Good point. Republics don't have princes and princesses, do they?
Well, this one apparently does, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. Hmm. That's an excellent question. That's the sort of searching and incisive question I've come to expect from you, Steve McCabe.
My pleasure, Simon. It's what we do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Anyway, I think I certainly wouldn't say don't go and see it. I think there's a lot to be enjoyed. It's a visual spectacle, certainly a bit of Star Wars history behind you. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a bit long for me, dragged in parts, but it's worth the price of a ticket, I'd say.
Yeah, go along. I mean, if you're a Star Wars fan, you already know you'll be going to see it.
Yes.
If you are, let's say, a lukewarm Skywalker, then I'm proud of that one. I stole that one, actually. There was a headline to a review for The Phantom Menace years ago, and it's lived with me ever since. But no, you already know if you're going to go and see this film or not.
Yeah, you do.
You already do. You don't need us to tell you.
Now, Steve, just one more film to talk about. It's a very hot summer, but if I do happen to come across a rainy day at some point, I'm looking to take my 6-year-old grandson to a film. Is this new Paddington Bear movie going to do the trick for him and possibly for me?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you.
Right, next.
Next.
Simple as that, it really is. And you know what? Okay, I've just realised something. I'm very cross with myself here. Didn't video. The Star Wars discussion didn't get videoed.
Oh, never mind.
Ready to go. Anyway, we'll edit that bit out. Where are we in the 12:32?
Never mind.
I'll edit it. So anyway, I just given a very reassuring yes to Paddington, so I need to edit that. Let me just quick note.
Okay.
Right, this is it. So I just said a very resounding yes.
Well, excellent. Yeah, I'd like to hear that. That's wonderful. Could you just expand on that yes a little bit, please?
Well, look, I mean, I'm assuming that you are familiar with Paddington of old.
I'm familiar, but I wasn't a character I embraced as a young person. I know of him. Maybe, I suppose, growing up in the UK, you would have been more given more Paddington beer to consume than perhaps we were in New Zealand. I'm not sure.
That's a fair comment, I think. Yeah. I mean, this is a character I grew up with.
Yeah,
and certainly in Britain, he is so well loved and so adored, and it's an absolutely adorable character. It really is.
Yeah.
So the entire film is nothing but life affirming sweetness that never ever crosses over into treacly or saccharine. It's just simply. I mean, I came out of the film thinking, this is as close to perfection as I've ever seen in a film.
Wow.
It is gorgeous. The story is reasonably involved, actually. Hugh Grant plays an actor who is trying to get his hands on a hidden fortune.
Right.
Paddington desperately wants to get the money together to buy a pop-up book of London for his Aunt Lucy back in Darkest Peru.
Right.
And by very, very convoluted circumstances, this pop-up book contains the clues to the whereabouts of the treasure. Paddington ends up being framed for burglary and going to prison.
Oh, my gosh.
Where he befriends Brendan Gleeson, playing Knuckles, the thug and burglar.
Right.
And the whole thing, it's preposterous. It's absurd. You will not stop laughing from start to finish. Every character is played with wit and warmth. Even, I mean, Hugh Grant clearly is settling into the most brilliant career now as a middle-aged, slightly roguish wag. And he's brilliant.
Okay.
It doesn't put a foot wrong from start to finish. I absolutely adored it, and I would love to see it again. There are sight gags everywhere. The script is delightful. You've got Ben Whishaw playing Paddington himself with the most adorable wide-eyed innocence.
Mm.
Yeah, go and see it. You don't need a child to take with you as a beard. Go and see it yourself. You'll be glad you did.
Ah, well, that's a wonderful recommendation. I think I better do that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
So, look, we are pretty much just about – it's Christmas is upon us. So it's sort of – if you look around all the media outlets, Steve, you'll see everyone's putting out their lists of, you know, best and worst of this or that of the year. You and I have certainly seen a share of film and concert. Let's start with films. Have you had a chance to think about what your favorite films are? Let's start with the favorites. What's on your – near the top of your list of the favourite movies of 2017.
Before I commit, because I'm still undecided between one or two, I'll just mention that you did a sterling job pulling together a list of all the films that we've thrashed over during the course of the year. Yeah. I mean, there's stuff in here I'd forgotten. There's stuff in here I wanted so desperately to forget.
Yes.
And there's some in here that really it's a miracle they stayed in our consciousness as long as they did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know I'm supposed to pick Dunkirk because it is going to get the best film Oscar this year.
Right.
And I know it is. And there's a couple of films I saw this year that aren't even on the list because we never actually got around to doing a proper formal review of them. Things like Baby Driver and The Handmaiden and Your Name that were just all lovely and brilliant and superb films. But I find myself taken. I mean, even above and beyond things like Hidden Figures and there's things in here like Get Out. There's some amazing films, but I'm going to have to go with T2 Trainspotting.
Ah, okay. I remember you I remember you talking about that on my podcast and okay, that's excellent. I thought that was excellent as well. I'm a bit like you. There's always going to be a small group you're going to struggle to choose from. In terms of just flat out entertainment and fun, I really enjoyed Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
In terms of, I do like good sci-fi. I really enjoyed Blade Runner 2049.
We know you did.
It's a serious drama. I think we reviewed this in this calendar year, although I think it was overseas, possibly released before Christmas last year. But I still think about Manchester by the Sea. I find that a very affecting film. And Dunkirk. Yes, I really got a lot out of Dunkirk. I'm struggling to pick one out of those. I think the film that probably, I don't know, it's a very grim film, but for some reason, Manchester by the Sea has stayed with me for a long time. It's not a very entertaining film in terms of having fun.
Right.
It's a very grim film, but maybe that's what it is. But it's hard to choose. It fills a particular niche in your soul, a film like that. It's a bit, you know, it's a dark.
Way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, that just popped out of nowhere. Anyway, so I'll go with that actually.
Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah. But what about the worst? And we've got a few to choose from. The worst film of the year.
There's a few we really kicked around here.
Yeah.
And well, I know I gave Wonder a bit of a savaging.
You did the other week. Yes, you did.
But no, it's by no means the worst, is it?
Well, I thought, for example, I thought The Mummy was pretty awful. This is Tom Cruise's version of The Mummy. I thought that was pretty appalling.
It was execrable.
That's a good word. A film, I don't think you saw it, but I had some expectations for this film. It was an adaptation of a graphic novel, The Dark Tower, and it had Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba in it, two pretty accomplished actors. I thought that failed. It was an out-and-out fail for me. It just was a very, very disappointing fail. Let me see what else. What were your expectations going into a film like the King Arthur film?
Well, on paper, it should have been brilliant.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was made on film and it was rubbish.
It was made on film. Yeah, that was a big disappointment for me as well.
King Arthur, right? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, right, mate. Yeah,
It was dire.
It was dire. So, God, it's hard to choose a worst one. Blimey. I know there's one. I remember one. Your review was so awful. I couldn't even look at the poster. You talked about one called Monster Trucks.
That was monstrously bad. Yes, I do remember that.
So, I probably, in a way, King Arthur was the worst, not because it was the out and out worst, because I think I had a very acute sense of disappointment at that, because it could have been a lot better and should have been a lot better.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't the worst. It wasn't the worst movie, but it was the biggest disappointment to me.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, there's sort of a difference there.
Yes. It's like you say to your kids, isn't it? I'm not angry. I'm just very disappointed.
Yeah. Now, I'm guessing if it turns out your favourite concert, the one you've just been telling us about is probably.
Well, hang on a second. I haven't had the fun of picking a worst film yet, and that's where the real fun lies.
Sorry. I thought
you've eviscerated a couple in there, but I haven't had a chance to. I mean, first of all, I did go and see 50 Shades Darker, and you did.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't see that one. Okay.
And when we have a year where that's not the worst film, then we know we've got problems. I mean, it wasn't even Viet Cong Skull Island, which was we forgot about that one, didn't we? That was pretty bad. No, I think, to be fair, so bad it deserves a kicking all over again has to be The Mummy.
Okay. Yeah, well, it was bad.
It really was thoroughly, thoroughly execrable. And we know there's going to be a sequel, and we know it's going to make Tom Cruise yet more millions that he's got no business earning.
Yes.
But seriously, can someone have a word?
Yeah, go on then. Oh, I think you're the man to do it, actually. Right. You and Tom are just like that, aren't you?
Well, next time he pops around for a cuppa, I shall bring it up.
Yeah, go on, and then report back to us here.
You're
okay,
on.
Excellent. Right, okay, so
anyway, we do concerts, yeah, best worst concerts.
Well, best concert, let me guess. I know you
was it back in February, by any chance?
Well, yes, I know. I'm such a big Springsteen fan that you could argue, how could there be a year in which he performs and that's not my favorite concert? He was excellent. I enjoyed it very, very much. But I have seen him before, so I know what to expect. And he did deliver. I mean, I think he did a great show. But actually, and this might be because it's freshest in my mind, I thought Cat Stevens was really, really good. And it was a very emotional concert for me. I also enjoyed Midnight Oil very much. I thought they were great. But probably I'll go with Cat Stevens, actually. It's pure nostalgia, but gave me something special. So I'll go with him.
Good enough. Well, I have to say, if you'd asked me this question this time yesterday, I would have had Bruce Springsteen probably at number two, but very close behind Midnight Oil.
Okay.
But that was yesterday.
Yes.
That was before Paul McCartney.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I think, do I really need to rehash that one?
No.
I think I gushed enough already, didn't I?
You did. No, that completely understand. I would be disappointed if you said anything else. No, that was quite right. I think we might agree on the worst concert, I suspect.
I think we were both at the worst concert. I think we yes. Yeah, and again, we gave her a kicking last time. It's not fair
we
to don't. Kick her out of the park.
We should just mention that we were both and sadly disappointed by the Stevie Nicks concert, mainly because she just rambled on and told those long stories that were just, I don't know, just completely ruined it for me. Anyway, so that would be sad. That would be the worst for me.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one. So let's look forward, though.
We won't look back with anger.
We'll look forward with hope.
Yes. Now, with hope and with a full and bulging wallet, I think, in terms of Taylor Swift. Is that right?
Well, yeah. We've got a couple of announcements have come up for the near future. We got, you know, I think we mentioned last time about Jimmy Barnes. And we've got, who else have we got coming up? Melissa Etheridge and Sheryl Crow.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good show. They're going to be.
That would be.
Yeah. They are going to be here. When are they going to be here? In April. That's not far off. They're going to be doing Auckland, Hamilton and Wellington. So they're doing a North Island tour.
Well, I reckon they could be very, very well. I saw Melissa. No, I didn't see her. I interviewed her.
Oh, right.
Would you believe that?
Okay.
Way in the 90s, early 90s when I was at TVNZ.
Right.
And she seemed a pretty switched on lady back then. So I have to remember that. So I think that she'd be great. And Sheryl Crow would be interesting. That'd be a great show.
I have a feeling that's going to be a really, really impressive performance.
Yeah.
The other one that my daughter is very, very, very excited about, I don't know if you're familiar with a young American woman by the name of Halsey. Halsey. I'm never quite sure how to pronounce it.
No, I've seen that name, but I'm not familiar, so tell me.
Oh dear, I don't really know what to tell you. I'm not that familiar with her, although
she's coming.
Among the younger set.
Yes.
Very, very popular.
She
will be playing in she's doing the one night, I believe, yeah, Spark Arena on April the 19th. So it's right around the same time that the other two ladies are gonna be here. April's shaping up to be a very, very busy month. For you and me, Simon.
Yeah. And when is, because Rag and Bone Man's coming. When's he coming? He's around about that time, isn't he?
Rag and Bone Man. Oh, it's a good job I've got our website up, because there's a listing of all this stuff right on the website.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful website it is too.
Hey, we're very proud of it, aren't we? But here we go. Rag and Bone Man, he's going to be in Auckland on the 6th of April.
All right.
So
wow.
There's a lot going on. It's going to be quite a busy month for us.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, we then need to do some very, very, very serious forward planning here. Because the really big announcement that's coming up is Taylor Swift.
What's the story with Taylor Swift? When's she here? And why do I have to put some razor loan to go and see her?
Well, she's announced one date for New Zealand. Now, let's remember the last time she was in New Zealand, she didn't actually do a concert. She just went and stomped on a few native birds on a beach somewhere where she wasn't meant to be.
Shot a video or something, didn't she?
I thought you were saying she shot a kiwi for a second then.
Oh, well.
I think she just stomped on their eggs, possibly. I'm not really sure. But yeah, she's going to be here on Friday, November the 9th at Mount Smart Stadium.
Okay.
And if you want to be down in what she's calling the snake pit, the little general admission area at the front of the stage.
Yes.
$800.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
let's remind ourselves, Paul McCartney, Beatle.
Yes.
Possibly the greatest rock legend still playing.
Yes.
Top price, $400.
That was the top price. Okay.
Top price. Yeah. Taylor Swift is asking double that.
Yeah. And her audience are going to be obviously a much younger audience. And, you know, there'll be some people who will not be able to afford that. Quite pure and simple.
Yeah. And I know this is the market at its purest.
Yes.
And this is simply her being allowed to charge what she sees fit. But no, I'm sorry. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's very disappointing. Yep. Ah, man. Yeah. I mean, that's nearly $1,000. Golly, that's a big night out.
That's for a single ticket. Let's not forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can remember. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. I'll mention it again because, you know, we're getting old and crusty. I can remember going to see Genesis at Roundhay Park in Leeds in 1986 and thinking that £15 was the most ridiculous sum I'd ever spend on a concert ticket.
Right, goodness.
$800. No, I'm sorry. I mean, we were kicking ourselves last night that we didn't blow $400 on tickets for Paul McCartney, but even that felt transgressively expensive.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Taylor Swift, as far as I'm concerned, has sold out a little bit there.
Yeah.
I realize this is completely blowing our opportunity for getting an interview when she shows up in town next year. But, you know, the truth has to be said. She's milking that one so badly.
Yeah, Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, anyway, it's a long way off. So if you're really keen, you could put some money aside starting now. And by by next December or November, you might have the money saved up. Anyway, that's excellent. Well, Steve, we may not get it. We may not get another one in before the new year. I suspect we probably won't. Christmas is going to be a busy time for most people. So we should just say Merry Christmas to all our legion of listeners.
Yes.
Or six of you.
Merry Christmas to anybody within the sound of our voices.
That's right. And Steve and I will be cracking on with more chit-chat about films and movies and everything else in 2018. There's a lot for us to cover. We've really enjoyed chatting to you and writing our reviews for you on our website. It's cravepodcast.com, of course, and Steve has a lot of fantastic photos on there that's always well worth looking at. And if you want to get in touch with us, we'd be delighted to hear from you. The email address is podcast@cravepodcast.com.
We're all over social media.
Oh,
we're everywhere. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, at cravepodcast.com. We've branched out onto Instagram because that's where all the cool kids are these days. We're everywhere.
Fantastic. So I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week and this year.
Oh, very good. Well done.
Very nice.